We're going to do three chapters, 13, 14, and 15 today, because it's really kind of one group. It's really one big section. Last week, chapter 12, verse 14, Samuel writes, "If you will fear the Lord and serve him and listen to his voice and not rebel against the command of the Lord, then both you and also the king who reigns over you will follow the Lord your God." So the command was, just fear God, serve him, listen to his voice. What we're going to see this week is Samuel not doing that. I said, listen to his voice or not, and then move from humility to arrogance. That's what you're going to see in Saul today. There's this movement of when he was in the beginning chapters looked at as very humble, and we'll look at that, where he actually hid himself among the baggage so that they wouldn't pick him as king. I mean, that's, you know, I imagine being selected as king would have been very scary, but he slides from this humility to pride and arrogance. And each chapter kind of has a different theme. Chapter 13, and I'm not going to get into all the details. There are a lot of details in these chapters. But Israel is outnumbered. They're afraid, and Saul makes a foolish sacrifice. Chapter 14, Saul makes a foolish rule. I mean, and we'll see what that is. And then in the end, Saul actually does some, he kind of obeys partially. And he moves from this humble guy that was really afraid to be king to really making some really foolish and unwise choices. So I'll read 1 through 14. I'll try not to read all of it. Saul was 40 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 32 years over Israel. Now Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel, of which 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in the hill country of Bethel, while 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. But he sent away the rest of the people, each to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that were in Geba. And the Philistines heard of it, and then Saul blew the trumpet throughout the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." And all Israel heard the news that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and also that Israel had become odious to the Philistines, and the people were then summoned to Saul at Gilgal. So there's this war starting again. I mean, just look on Fox News this morning. It's actually the very country that this is happening on is in the Gaza Strip. There's trouble over there. And it's this exact area. And now the Philistines assembled to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people like the sand which is on the seashore in abundance. And they came up and camped at Michmash, east of Beth Haven. So they're right now, they've got 3,000 Israelis and 30,000 chariots. There's a whole bunch of textural things going on here with these numbers. The number for 30,000 and 3,000 in Hebrew looks very much alike. And they're, because somebody said if they had 30,000 chariots, there'd be 5 chariots for every guy, which is kind of tough. So the point is that they were vastly outnumbered, the Israelites. And the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were hard-pressed. Then the people hid themselves in caves and thickets and in the cliffs and in cellars and in pits. So they're scared. I mean, if you saw an army like that running coming up against you, the natural reaction would be to go hide. And some of the Hebrews crossed the Jordan into the land of Gad and Gilead. But as for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. So there's this, they're outnumbered, they're afraid, the people are running. What is Saul going to do? Okay, is he going to humble himself? What's he going to do? Verse 8, now he waited 7 days according to the appointed time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. Back in chapter 10, if you can either write this down, or chapter 10, verse 8, Samuel gave Saul a command. He said, verse 8, "You shall go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. You shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do." So they're waiting, okay? He's waited 7 days. The people are scattering. They're all afraid. Saul looks around and goes, "Oh, this is trouble." And Samuel's not here. So Saul said, "Bring to me the burnt offering and the peace offering." And he offered the burnt offering. And it came about as soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, and behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him and greet him. So it's like he waited, but not long enough. Samuel had given him a command, "Just wait there, and I'll come." Verse 11, "But Samuel said, 'What have you done?' And Saul said, 'Well, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come with the appointed within the appointed days, and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, therefore I said, now the Philistines will come down against Gilgal, and I have not, and have I not asked the favor of the Lord? So I forced myself and offered a burnt offering.'" This is like, I mean, if you read in Exodus, when Aaron made the calf, well, it just kind of came out, you know. And Adam, the same thing. "Well, it was the woman you gave me that did this." If this is, you know, and I don't, you know, there's a lot of guys I can relate to in Scripture, and this is probably not one of them that you really want to relate to, but if this isn't like most of us, we're told to wait. Waiting is not good. Not good. It's not fun. And all you had to do was wait. And seeing people scatter, and you're the king, and it's like, I got to do something. Maybe he should have just sat and prayed and remember the humility he had in the beginning. But he doesn't. And he blames everybody else. He blames the Philistines. He blames Samuel for not coming. And he blames the people for running. So I forced myself to offer the burnt offering. So you can kind of see why he did what he did. The point is, he had a command and he didn't listen. And Samuel earlier in chapter 12 said, "Fear God, serve him, and listen to his voice." That's all he wanted Samuel or Saul to do, and he didn't do it. And then verse 13 and 14, this is kind of, there's a lot of sad verses in this section. "And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, for now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever.'" This mistake was big enough to pick another king. You know, "For now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart. The Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Now, I don't want to, you know, this is a specific story about a specific man. You know, this is God's reaction to what Saul did. "Saul, you're not going to be king anymore." At this, you know, at certain junctures in history, men had to stand up for what was right and had to look and act faithfully. And this was one of those times. All of the nation was watching this. And Samuel says, "Saul, you didn't obey. That's the only thing I wanted you to do. Wait 7 days." And it wasn't his right to bring a sacrifice. That was the priest's right to bring sacrifices. That wasn't his job. So at the end, I mean, these again, this is the sad part of this chapter where Samuel says, it's too late. You have not kept the commandment of God. And now your kingdom is not going to rule, and God has picked someone else. then in chapter 14, basically, it kind of goes from bad to worse. There's still this army, and in chapter 14, Saul makes this foolish rule. It's like, and as you read through this, and I would suggest just reading this chapter, and when you go home, read it out loud, because there's some real questions. Like, why would he make this stupid rule? Why would he even make this vow that we're going to read about? Anyway, in this chapter, it says, chapter 1 of verse 14. Now the day came that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young men who were carrying his armor, come, let us cross over to the Philistines' garrison in order to, that is on yonder side. But he did not tell his father. So there's this separation. Jonathan goes off, separates himself from Saul, and as you read through this story, he goes after, he realizes they got a chance to go against the Philistines, and it says that they killed, 20 men. Look at verse 6. Then Jonathan said to his young man, who was carrying his armor, come, let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. So Jonathan is like, and this is what's cool, as we learn about Jonathan through 1 and 2 Samuel. He's more faithful than his father, Saul. And he says, you know, God can do this whether there's a bunch of us or there's a few of us. God can restrain or can save us, whether there's a lot or a few. And then the armor bearer says, I'll go with you. Let me get to the... they defeat, I don't know where it is, where it says they killed 20 people. Does anybody see that? Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and the armor bearer behind him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer put to death, and the bearer put some to death, verse 13, after him. In the first slaughter, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, was about 20 men within about a half of Pharaoh on an acre of land. So this is like a huge victory, and it gives people, the guys that were scared, it starts giving them courage to go after the Philistines. And there was trembling in the camp of the Philistines, in the field, and among all the people, even among the garrison, and the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, so that it became a great trembling. Now Saul's watchmen in Gibeah of Jonathan looked, and behold, the multitude had melted away, and they went here and there. So the enemy is running. Let me jump to the... And Saul does some other things. He asks for the ark. He wants the ark to come again. And again, it's kind of like a rabbit's foot. It was God who told him he would be there, whether the ark was there or not. And he asks for the ark to come, and he asks for the priest to pray. Look at verse 19. It's kind of an interesting verse. And it happened while Saul talked to the priest that the commotion in the camp of the Philistines continued and increased. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. That, they think that at this time they had the priest wore this Urim and Thummim. There was these like breastplates that had jewels on them, and when they put their hand on it, they could reveal what God was doing. And Saul said to him, "Take your hand away. We don't need to know now. Don't ask God now what's going on." And it's almost like he's starting to think he can do this on his own. Don't ask God now. Don't ask him. We can do this. And now the Hebrews who were with the Philistines previously, who went up, look at verse 23. So the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Bethaven. Who won the battle? It's pretty obvious. Jonathan had just killed 20 men. They turned the Israeli army around, but who gets credit? It was the Lord that, it says, the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Bethaven. Look at verse, and then let me read 24 through 27. Now the men of Israel were hard pressed on that day, for Saul had put the people under an oath, saying, "Cursed be the man who eats food before evening, and until I have avenged myself on my enemies." So none of the people tasted food. Now I'm never in the military, but that is not a good rule. You know, one of the things I think that in the military is having enough food and energy to follow a huge army was a big thing. And Saul says to these guys, don't eat anything. Now, why? Kind of like most rules, man-made rules, kind of dumb. I mean, it was a foolish rule. It was a foolish vow. And all the people of the land entered the forest, and there was honey on the ground. And when the people entered the forest, behold, there was a flow of honey, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Can you imagine being in a battle? And I mean, I get tired just sitting at a computer. These guys are in a battle, and there's honey sitting all over the place in, I don't know how, you know, beehives or whatever. And Saul says, don't eat. Don't get energy. Verse 27 starts with a tough word. But Jonathan had not heard when his father put the people under the oath. Therefore, he put out the end of his staff that was in his hand and dipped it in the honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were brightened. So the one guy that started the battle, won the battle, through God's help, Jonathan's son eats honey. Now Saul has a problem. We got this man-made rule, made a foolish rule, and that rule is going to threaten Jonathan's life. And this is who I like Jonathan's story so much in here. That's who Jonathan is named after. I mean, it's really, as we go on and you learn more and more about Jonathan, you like him more and more. let's jump. It talks about when these people were real hungry, when they won the battle, they were so hungry they started killing the animals and just eating them, and which was against the Mosaic law to eat the blood with the meat. And they, basically, the rule that Samuel came up with was it ended up making everybody else sin, all the men sin when they were hungry. Because they end up killing a bunch of animals and eating the blood. And then, verse 34, then Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, each one of you, bring me his ox or his sheep and slaughter it here and eat. And do not sin against the Lord by eating the blood." So all the people that night brought each one his ox with them and slaughtered it there. Who did Saul ask him to bring the sacrifice to? Him. So he goes, as we go through this, like, what happened to Saul? That moved from this humble guy hiding in the baggage to making a stupid rule, a stupid vow. And as you read through this, you see Saul move from this humble, kind of gentle selection of a king to arrogant and prideful. And then look at verse 39, it says, "For as the Lord lives, who delivers Israel, though it is in Jonathan, my son, he shall surely die." But not one of all the people answered him. I mean, what happened to Saul? Did he think he had so much power now that he could, that even his, he would kill his own son for this foolish vow he made? And as you read on further, look, verse 44 and 45. And Saul said, "May God do this to me." They drew lots, but in the end it says, "And Saul said, may God do this to me and more also, for you shall surely die, Jonathan. I made a rule and you broke it." But the people said to Saul, "Must Jonathan die, who has brought about this great deliverance of Israel? You're going to kill the very, your own son that brought the victory against the Philistines? Far from it. As the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day." So the people rescued Jonathan, and he did not die. And it talks about Saul going up and going after the Philistines. Somehow, between the first year that Saul became king and now, he lost his humility. He lost his and became prideful and arrogant. As we move through and near the end of the book of 2 Samuel, you're going to see a change in David. And we'll talk about that when we get there. There was a quote I read in one of the commentaries. I think Bill Arnold, he said, "Our guiding principles in life must be external to our moral compass." What Saul needed to do was listen to God's laws, not make up his own silly rule. If you've been around church long enough, is there ever any silly rules that we have? Is it focusing on the wrong object of our worship? And then in chapter 15, there's this whole, first he came up with a foolish rule. Where's my note? Hang on a minute. Oh, a foolish sacrifice. He did a foolish sacrifice. He had a foolish rule. Now he has a partial disobedience. Chapter 15. There's this, the command, and look at chapter 15, verse 3. Well, I'll read the first three verses. "Then Samuel said to Saul, 'The Lord sent me to anoint you as,' then Samuel said to Saul, 'The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people, over Israel. Now, therefore, listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel. Now he set himself against him on the way while he was coming up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and utterly destroy all that he has, and do not spare him, but put to death both man and woman, child and infant, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey.'" And this is, I mean, I know whenever, there was just something on, I think it was on Bones, believe it or not. It was an anti-Christian statement that talked about, the guy was an Arab and he was, they got in a big argument and he said, "Well, it's your Bible that has all this blood and guts and commands people to kill everybody." If you understand who Elimelech was and what they did, sacrificing their own children on altars, and I mean, it's a disgusting religion. And God said, "You need to wipe them out, or it's going to be trouble." Then Saul summoned, jumped up. I won't read all of it. It says he summoned the people and numbered them, 200,000 foot soldiers, 100 men of Judah. But go all the way down to verse 8. And he captured Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep and oxen and fatlings and lambs and all that was good, and were not willing to destroy them utterly, but everything despised and worthless they utterly destroyed. What was the command? Now, and I say it's a simple command. I'm guessing this would have been a tough command to obey, to kill all the kids, all the infants. And they didn't obey it. And it says they can't, and the specific rule was go kill the king. But Saul and the people spared Agag, the best of the sheep. So they looked at the sheep and they were like, well, these are pretty nice. Why would I destroy these? And they didn't do it. Then the word of the Lord, verse 10, came to Samuel saying, who's got the NIV? Who's got an NIV? Read verse 11. What does yours say in verse 11? Yeah. New American Standard says, I regret, this is God speaking, I am grieved, I'm saddened that I made King Saul the king, for he has turned back from following me. He went from this humble, apparently good looking, taller than anybody, humble guy, to where God says, now I'm grieved. Because you haven't followed me. You have turned back from following me, Saul. And you haven't carried out my commands. I told you to kill everybody. And Samuel was distressed and cried out to the Lord all night. Look at verses 12 through 14. And Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul. And it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel. And behold, he set up a monument for himself and turned and proceeded on to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed are you of the Lord. I have carried out the command of the Lord. It was a lie. And look what's in verse 14. You can see these two guys, Samuel and Saul, standing there talking to each other, and Saul goes, I followed the command. And then Samuel looks at him and says in verse 14, but Samuel said, well, what then is the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? If you kept the commands, what are all these sheep doing here? What's the ox doing here? Samuel, you lied. You didn't follow the command of the Lord. And then he starts making excuses. And then Saul said, well, they have brought them back from the Amalekites for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God. But the rest we have utterly destroyed. We're doing this for you, Samuel. We kept the best, so that we could sacrifice this to God. Come on, Saul. Really? Then Samuel said to Saul, wait, and let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. And he said to him, well, tell me. And jump over to verse 20. I'm going to read 20 through 23. Then Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of the Lord and went on the mission which the Lord sent me and have brought back Agag, the king of the Amalekite, and utterly destroyed the Amalekites. Look at the good that I've done. But the people took the spoil, the sheep and the oxen, the choicest of things, devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God at Gilgal. This isn't a problem. We kept this stuff for you, Samuel, and for God. And you recognize these verses. And Samuel said, verse 22, Has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, to heed better than fat of rams. It's like, all the religious stuff that, you know, I mean, I think about, I want to be careful with this, but when I went to, was in Abu Dhabi, you know, and if you're in an Arab country, it's like, I forget what time it was, the minarets go off or whatever, you know, and the chanting comes out of it, and people stop on the streets and, you know, pray and all, and it's like religious activities. Everything, stuff on the street just stops. And it struck me then, I thought, it's a show. Now, some people may be very sincere, but my guess is a lot of, you probably hear it every day, you almost get used to it. And it was a show. And Samuel says to Saul, has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying? You didn't listen, Saul. The sacrifices are nothing. It's a show. You should have listened. Listening and obeying is better than the sacrifice. You know, whatever we might say, listening to God is way, not way harder, but sometimes harder than writing a check. Or just listen. That's all he wanted Saul to do. Fear God, serve him, and listen. That's what Samuel wanted and what God wanted Saul to do. And then it says in verse 23, for rebellion is as a sin of divination, and insubordination as iniquity and idolatry, because you have rejected the word of the Lord. Who else has NIV? You want to read another? Look at read verse 23, because there's different words. My NIV says insubordination, but read verse 23 of 15. Which came first? Saul, you rejected the Lord your God. So now he's rejecting you as king. And it says, and arrogance is as iniquity and idolatry because you have rejected the word of the Lord. And again, Saul goes on to blame. He's blaming the people. He's blaming everybody but himself. It's always the other guy. You know, well, the devil made me do it. Samuel says, just listen. It would have been, if Saul would have just said, I sinned, I was wrong. If you read through this, he never says that. He always blames someone else. It was Diane that made me do it. It was my upbringing. I was in trouble. Obeying is, turn to, let me read a couple more verses. Verse 29 of 15. And also the glory of Israel will not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that he should change his mind. And then in the very end, 34 and 35. Then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death. For Samuel grieved over Saul, and the Lord grieved or regretted that he had made Saul the king over Israel. These are sad verses. This was a sad time for the nation of Israel. Because Saul went from this humble, "I'm not sure you're picking the right guy, I'm going to hide in the bag," to arrogance and pride and blaming everybody else. And as I thought through this, I thought of Romans chapter 12, verse 3. Right after the first two verses in Romans 12, Paul writes, "I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, what is good and acceptable and perfect." And then this: "For through the grace given to me, I say to every man among you, do not think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each of us a measure of faith." Did Saul think more of himself than he ought? Did he think, "I am king, and I can do what I want"? And I think, God has translated us from death to life, from the power of darkness to light. He's adopted us into his son, into his family. We are adopted sons of God. And I think what the world can really may dislike out of Christianity is self-righteousness. To think, "Well, we're better than you guys. Look who we are." And Paul says, think right. Think soberly. Don't think of yourself more highly than you are. It's God who works in us to will and to do of his good pleasure. Let's pray. Father, as we look at these difficult events in the life of a man that started well, and Father, I pray that as we walk this through this life with you, Father, I pray that you would keep us from arrogance and pride and self-righteousness. Father, teach us to just listen, serve you, obey you. Not as a show, not as a... that the world would see us and how good we are, but they would see you and your son and how good and gracious you are. Father, as we leave this place this week, I pray that you would give us opportunities to be a testimony of your grace and your goodness in our lives to the people around us. It's in your son's name I pray.